Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is the host, Travis Loop, joined for this episode by two of my colleagues to talk about 2020 and look at congressional issues and legislative issues, regulatory issues. I'm with Claudio Terninen. He is the Senior Director of Government Affairs. Claudio, how are you doing?
Great. Good to be here. Thank you, Travis.
Yeah, glad we could do this. And I have Steve Dye. He is a legislative director. Steve, how's it going for you?
Good. Thanks, Travis. Happy to do this.
Good. So let's, 2020 looks like another interesting year in Washington, D.C. You guys follow all this on a regular basis. So I'm really interested to kind of get this preview from you as to what the water sector should be looking at or can be expecting in the year ahead. The legislative side, what should the water sector be looking at? What might be happening?
Well, we're off to a pretty quick start here in 2020. We wrapped up 2019 with the completion of the fiscal year 20 appropriations bills. Saw pretty solid numbers for the primary water infrastructure financing programs that we've historically been very supportive of: the Clean Water SRF, the Drinking Water SRF, WIFIA, USDA loan and grant program. And we also saw some new funding coming in for some new things like workforce development and grants for CSO, SSO, and stormwater collection and conveyance infrastructure. So we were very pleased with the way 2019 wrapped up, and we're really kind of just picking up in 2020 on those programs for the budget process that's going to kick off here over the next month or so. And we'll be pushing hard for solid numbers in all those programs. That'll actually be the basis for our annual fly-in that we do every year, National Water Policy Fly-In. And this year we're doing it the end of April, April 27th and 28th in Washington, D.C. And it'll be an opportunity for WEF members to come in from all over the country to meet with their members of Congress and to advocate for policies on Capitol Hill and funding for programs on Capitol Hill that are really good for our sector. The dates for that are April 27th and 28th in Washington. And the registration actually just opened up for it, coincidentally. It's at waterweek.us website. So just go to waterweek.us and register to join us in D.C. I urge WEF members to also try to coordinate participation with their member association. Usually there's the member association or the government affairs committee of the member association sends a delegation out to D.C. And last year we had over 32 or 34 states represented from across the country from delegations of member associations. So if you're planning on coming, reach out to those folks and be part of a group of your colleagues from across the state and coordinate your meetings on Capitol Hill. As I said, this is a great opportunity. We have several hundred water professionals from across the country come to D.C. every year and have been very effective in getting robust funding for these appropriations bills, the budget for these programs that are critical for financing water infrastructure. So that's a big part of Water Week, big part of our effort in 2020. We're also keeping our eye very closely on some policy things underway in Congress. The biggest thing is reauthorization of the Clean Water SRF program. That program expired a number of years back, but Congress still has funded it consistently at very solid numbers. But it's not authorized, so we technically are really supporting a program that Congress can pull back from any time it wants. So we're really pushing hard for movement of legislation that would reauthorize the Clean Water SRF program. The bill we're supportive of in the House of Representatives is H.R. 1497, the Water Quality Protection and Job Creation Act. of 2019 by Representative Peter DeFazio. He's the chair of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, and that would reauthorize the Clean Water SRF program at pretty significant increases over what has been funded over the last several years. That's going to be a big part of Water Week for the fly-in. That'll be one of our big policy requests. Another thing that is in that bill that I just was mentioning is a provision that WEF was supportive of. It was that will set aside or give the authority to states to set aside up to 1% of the clean water SRF appropriations from the federal government to go to support water or wastewater workforce development. So wastewater agencies, clean water agencies that have workforce development programs can go to the state SRF programs and get a grant essentially out of that, out of the SRF. It'll give the authority to the state SRF programs to do principal forgiveness and forgive the loan, do 0% loans, any number of incentives to use those dollars to go for workforce development programs. So we're pleased to see that included in HR 1497. And then there's other provisions in that bill that are all very good for us in the water sector, including the WIFIA program reauthorization, as well as that new grant program for CSO, SSO, and stormwater programs, or collections and conveyance programs. So that was those are, you know, some of the big things that we're watching closely. As I mentioned, we've got a lot happening in Washington, D.C. these days. Some of it is moving rather quickly legislatively and policy-wise. One thing that I think we're all very familiar with in the water sector is this PFAS challenge. There's been a lot happening in communities and in states across the country around PFAS. We find it to be a very challenging issue to deal with on Capitol Hill because Congress wants to step in and become involved with advancing some potential solutions out of the federal government. But sometimes they're moving a little bit faster than sound policy and science really work. So we've really made a lot of effort over the last several weeks. And thanks in large part to a lot of WEF membership engagement on this. Our Water Advocates Grassroots Outreach Program has done a fantastic job of contacting the members of Congress to help members of Congress understand about the challenges around PFAS in communities and the mission of water utilities to protect communities and protect public health and PFAS being one of those things that we don't want in our utilities, but we're finding in the utilities and in hotspot areas across the country and that there really needs to be an effort to try to address that, remove that. So we're really trying hard to help Congress get the right policies in place to support those efforts. That'll be another thing we're asking members of WEF to become more involved with in the year ahead is around PFAS. With that, I'll pause there, Travis, and give you some other things to work on with Claudio.
Yeah, well, I just want to ask, so our members out there and people across the water sector, what would you encourage them to do to help support these pieces of legislation that we think are good for the sector?
We have our Water Advocates program up on WEF.org. If you go to WEF.org, there's a section, a tab there on the top called Advocacy. If you hit that button, that tab, it'll drop down. You can see the Water Advocates link and go to that. And then we have a number of calls to action out right now on increased funding for water infrastructure, on communicating with Congress around PFAS. A new bill that we're supportive of that is being that was recently introduced by Senator Jeff Merkley out of Oregon that would use new grant dollars out of the Department of Energy to help with small and mid-sized wastewater agencies to do energy resource recovery anaerobic digestion projects. We got a new call to action going up on that one as well. So things that our members can do it, go to the Water Advocates site. All you have to do is click the link and enter your information and a letter would be generated for you to go to your members of Congress because you'll just enter your zip code and it'll find your members of Congress. And all you have to do is hit send and it'll fire off an email to your members of Congress. And that's actually a really important thing to do because a lot of data shows that the direct advocacy by constituents to members of Congress have the most impact upon decision making by policymakers, by members of Congress, that when they hear from constituents, that impacts their decision making more than really anything else does. We really urge members of WEF to use the Water Advocates Program to become engaged and to contact Congress. And of course, like I started off here, come to the fly-in, and that's also that face-to-face meeting, that creating that personal connection with your member of Congress and their staff, being the voice for our sector within that congressional office. It's really easy to do, and it has a huge benefit.
Claudio, on the regulatory side of things, what is 2020 looking like? What's of interest to WEF and to the water sector? What kind of things might be happening?
On the regulatory side, there is a lot of activity, especially methods development, criteria development, but those are regular activities of EPA that we see normally. But we do have a couple of potential game changers that are brewing through the system. One of them is for the Supreme Court, and that is the Maui case. It's a case that's been going on for some time. It's County of Maui versus Hawaii Wildlife Fund. And it actually had a hearing on November 6th of last year with the Supreme Court. And we don't have an outcome yet. But the reason that's important is because we'll see what the court thinks in terms of connectivity through groundwater. Groundwater has been a big source of contention because some believe it should be regulated, some believe it should not. Some states regulated already, other states do not. So it is, and it always has been, a point of contention. And of course, the interest of the public interest, the public interest to protect groundwater is important because it's a source of drinking water for a lot of populations. So it is an important case because depending which way it goes, we may see different interpretation or may have an interpretation of, for example, the inclusion of groundwater within the Clean Water Act, which could mean that lots of activities that currently do not require MPDES permits, so that is the permit system within the Clean Water Act, may be required. And that could create some confusion in some states where groundwater is already regulated through other means, or confusion with the Safe Drinking Water Act. So another one that may be a game changer, or is already happening to some extent, is the administration's activities on the waters of the United States. This has been coming for some time. In the end of the Obama administration, there is in 2015, there was a new rule that some folks believe it was more encompassing, or some people believe that it overreached in terms of trying to protect wetlands and other water bodies. It went too far. Others think that it was necessary because the science showed that it was necessary. There were substantial science that showed that there was increasing connectivity within the systems of water, including groundwater. So there is that connection too, even with the Maui case. But so some folks think that this administration may not be paying as enough attention to that science that was used to make the determination for the findings that led to the original 2015 rule. So that's a contention that we're seeing here, this overreach versus science, and you know, some think that some folks don't think that they are self-exclusive. The current administration believes that there was an over-reliance in information, that in over-interpretation of information, when really statutory language is what they needed to be focusing on. But so we're expecting really what the communications from the administration has been, that there will be a change in this reach. It may be narrow the reach of what may be the new rule, which could, some folks think that that will bring us to the old standard that was an important place when we used some different criteria for making decisions. And that, so it in some ways it clarifies, because some of the court cases will then fall through or have to be rendered moot. And other cases then may come up because that we expect litigation from the other side. So I think in the end, it is going to be a change, but it could be the pendulum simply moving the other way. Another activity that I think is a game changer from, at least in our sector, not so much as a broad policy, but it could eventually become very important, is the issue of affordability. For about 40 years now, 30 years, the administration, the EPA, not the administration, many administrations, but the EPA has used a certain document a certain criteria for making decisions about what communities can afford when negotiating what they need to do under a permit or under a consent decree. That discussion and or the criteria that they use for that is something that has for a long time been contentious because in one hand, communities would say, well, you're not looking at all the information that I have. On the other hand, sometimes there's not enough information on what's affordable or not for a community, depending on where they stand in terms of what they can afford to charge once they put new systems in place. So this affordability discussion has been very contentious for many years. And we that is Water Environment Federation, the National Association of Clean Water Agencies, and the American Water Works Association have come together and analyzed some information that came from a study ordered by Congress that made collect a lot of data, but it didn't really make any recommendations. So the associations have come together and we have made actually some recommendations to EPA for them to consider. So one of them, for example, is with modern America's bimodal income distribution and highly community-specific cost of living, no one metric can serve as a bright line when water service is affordable for individual households. So the idea that there might be other ways to look at what's affordable, what's not affordable. So this discussion will continue, but right now where we are is waiting for EPA to publish what might be their reaction to that study and what they may do with our recommendations. So it is very possible that the EPA will come back with, hey, we propose these changes to that original framework for analyzing affordability. And what do you think? And give people an opportunity to comment back. So what the tension is going to be is that some communities say, well, all this information you're asking is not publicly available, or some cities can afford to have that kind of data, other cities may not. So that's one of the points of contention. And we may have to find ways to address that, maybe alternative data. So that's all it's going to play out, I think, as we look forward. And the reason this is important is, depending which direction EPA goes, you may end up with a certain approach to this, and they may make more improvements unaffordable. And what does that mean for communities that now have that? It may mean that additional funding may have to be available for those communities, especially smaller communities. So this is a game changer in a way that it will change the way we've done those kinds of analysis going forward. A couple more things that are making their way. One of them is the peak wet weather rulemaking. EPA started in April of 2018, announcing a new rulemaking to look at issues associated with the management treatment of peak flows during wet weather events at POTWs. But it's specifically related to separate sanitary sewer systems. So for this rulemaking, EPA will evaluate changes to its MPDES program, which is the main regulatory program and permitting program under the Clean Water Act. Its regulations to establish transparent, of course, they want it to be transparent and lasting framework to permit peak flow management. The reason it's a big deal is because for a long time, there was this idea of how much, you know, you can ask people to do certain things, and then once you ask them to do it, are you done? So this is one of those kinds of situations where you're pushing people to municipalities to push as much flow through their facilities as possible before they divert it into the water bodies without treatment. And one of the issues here is that maybe you can go into a primaries, which is a larger part of the plant, and then bypass your secondary, and then meet in the end of the treatment, get some disinfection, and then discharge, and still meet water quality standards. So this is a big deal, because once you put that in place, then the question is, well, when is it appropriate to require that the community does more? Or is that it? Once you permit it, you approve them to do it. And that's my point of contention with environmentalists and others, because it's the ceiling versus the floor. So West's position on this has always been that we think that we need to continue to do better. Our communities need to do what they can afford to do, but that, you know, you need to continue to evaluate through the process, and there are regulatory mechanisms in place to do that, evaluate what you can do next. So if that's the best you can do now, then you reevaluate later what you can do. And some folks think, no, once you permit it, that's the way it should be. So I think, you know, it's gonna play itself out. But this is a tough topic for EPA and can be a game changer depending how it comes out. Finally, I would like to end with the issue of the nutrient survey. There is nutrients is just a big deal, as we all know. We are trying to keep as much nutrients out of the water bodies as possible. And at the same time, we want to do it in a financially responsible way, in a way the communities can afford. On top of that, you have the lead and copper rule that has come out recently and lots of comments on that. But there seems to be a sense from water treatment folks that EPA is pushing them towards a kind of treatment of drinking water that will lead to more nutrients going into water bodies. So nutrients is a big important issue from that perspective. But the nutrient survey is really focused on waste secondary treatment facilities nationwide and find out what they're doing, what kinds of technologies are they using. So with that idea that if we're going to do better or improve technology down the line, what is being done now, what the basic line, what is the baseline is, and then we can ask people to do more down the line because we have a better understanding of the technologies they are using and understand of the technologies that are available. So that's how they're connected. The survey ended in November 26, 2019, but EPA, so if you see that, oh, it ended, no, EPA still is accepting comments. If you go to EPA's website and look for nutrient survey, POTW nutrient survey, you should be able to find the page where there you can still submit information if you'd like to do that. So those are some of the key things that I thought would be important in that area of the regulatory.
Claudio and Steve, definitely a lot on tap, no pun intended, in 2020 on the Hill and inside the Beltway here in DC that have big ramifications around the country for the water sector. I'm glad to work alongside you guys at WEF and have you tracking all of this because it's an ever-changing landscape. I, like all of you, encourage our members and others in the sector to keep in touch with WEF and go to our website, sign up for Water Advocates, come to Water Week. The more people that are part of this process, the louder our voice is, the more we can shape the direction of these things, both in legislation and the regulatory front. So, Claudio and Steve, thank you guys a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks, Travis.
Words on Water.